The Vox Markets Podcast.
It's Thursday. Yeah, Thursday the 7th. Paul, this is Asking the Date there. We are live. First time ever with Paul Hill, you know, in full effect. And, you know, full-time analysts, and you can catch us on the podcast later as well, of course. But it's nice to be live, Paul, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, so, first time ever, so I'm absolutely delighted. Yeah. It was great, your idea. So, yeah, absolutely, I'm with it. Let's bring it live. Let's allow people to ask us questions as we go through some of the stocks.
Yes, you've got to keep it clean, because I know you're a foul-mouthed, potty-mouthed man, but, especially in this market. It's been really hard, you know, and I've seen, you know, one of your stocks had a bit of a beating, and I've taken those kind of, you know, gut punches before, and it's so hard when it happens. You do get over it, you know, time heals, and you learn from it, but it's so hard. I thought, you know, oh, my word, but we'll cover those stocks anyway. But let's look at any macro on your mind at the moment, Paul.
Well, I mean, obviously, we've got the we've had interest rates sort of like still ticking up in the UK. We've got some quite big decisions in September. It looks as though the Fed is deciding to put on hold. It may increase later in the year in November, but it seems about done at just over 5%. Where the UK is going to head will depend on wage inflation and core inflation, which came in slightly sort of softer than expected last time, but still pretty elevated at about 7%. So the game is still out on that one. You know, that's really going to drive the markets, particularly on the small cap. And it was quite interesting, actually. I had a good chat to Paul Scott at Stockopedia, who's a really sort of like, you know, 30-year veteran when it comes to sort of like investing. And I strongly suggest people have a look at that video, which
we won't good video, live, actually.
It was great. Yeah, I mean, it's
very
got
honest as well, you know, and about his stocks. And I did like the way when literally you talked to him about, I think it's Plexus, have done very well for him. Yeah. But he's gone quite big in it, and you asked him percentage-wise, and he went...
I know. Exactly.
Okay. By the way, look at the bond chart. There's a 2-year bond chart, and it's near the high is 5.5. It's not far off that. 5.1. It's come down a little bit. But but it's worth watching that. It's a very good video, that. And I do enjoy your chats with Paul.
But what he was saying was he's looking forward, actually, on the stocks side. I'll see on the small cap for a mean reversion trade, because most of the sort of the big cap tech, especially over in the States, is still pretty highly bid. It's around about a sort of forward PE ratio of about 19 compared to small caps, which is significantly lower than that in the UK. And we're in a real deep bear market. But once as that the yield curve starts to decrease, hopefully, or the market starts thinking it's going to decrease next year, then that could well be the catalyst behind the small cap sector. And he reckons he's actually starting to see some green shoots. It's still early days to call when that turn is going to be. But when it is, then the liquidity sort of like, or illiquidity in the small cap market will act as a sort of a booster on the upside, as it has been on the downside, because it'll stop sort of front run redemptions. So I'm still fairly optimistic in the small cap sector going forward, particularly for sort of next year. Bearish on the macro side. I'm not 100% convinced we're going to get this perfect sort of like no landing scenario that the market's sort of baking in. I mean, in fact, a lot of the sort of S&P 500 earnings estimates for this year and for next year have just been ticking up. So they seem to have bottomed out, and people reckon that on a bottom-up perspective, the large corporations in the world are going to start to increase earnings next year. And I still think that's pretty much in the hard bucket, because personally, I believe the Fed is going to keep rates higher for longer, because I think they've got a much stronger economy, as could well come down in interest rates faster than people expect, assuming that the inflation does roll over and the labor market does soften off. So I'm still optimistic. But yeah, when it comes to sort of like, you know, the trials and tribulations, me and you operate in the smaller sectors of the actual market. And 2 weeks ago, we'll come on to it in a moment, but the stock you were referring to is Sondrel. And I've got a bit of an allergy, actually, because yesterday, because it was the nice weather and I had a bit of downtime and my wife had a bit of downtime, we made a sort of impulse decision to go to Alton Towers, and we went on the Smiler for the first time ever. And the last time I went to Alton Towers was probably a big theme park 20 years ago. And it was a howler. I was screaming. I was absolutely terrified. And that's what I say with the analogy, the metaphor, that was when it came to Sondra's results.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Well, you just went there, you and your wife. No kids.
Yeah,
you
it was just the two of us. Yeah, it was great. Because
that's,
it was
that's good, though, because actually, often, you know, sometimes when we've gone to theme parks with our kids, we do look around and see a couple who are like without kids. And why would you want to come here? But I suppose it gives you a break. But look at that. That chart there is the all aim and share index. Yeah. And it's showing you down here, 731 days in, 45% down, and that's including all the winners as well. So, you know, you can imagine, you know, that's the average pretty much of the index. And so it's been really hard. That's 2 years now the AIM All Share has been going down. And I think, like I said, this is almost worse than the great financial crash, because when that happened, you know, central banks have stepped in and we had the massive relief rally. But this kind of thing, unless they start, you know, ratcheting down interest rates, I can't see an immediate, you know, relief rally. I suppose you may see, like Paul said, you may see when they start hit peak interest rates and start winding down. Because let's be honest, it's working. And I liked it last night. I said, literally, what with inflation and interest rates high, what they've got is like they put, you know, handcuffs on the ankles of someone, and then they're strangling them as well. So you find it hard to walk, and you've got no breath. And that's what the economy is. All the PMIs are rolling over. And you know, this is a lagging effect. Like I said, we haven't been really just started. If you go about 18 months, and a lot of people, the lag effect is 18 months, these interest rates. We only just started raising rates 18 months ago, and now they're still raising rates. So I think there is going to be something seriously, you know, slowing down. The economy will seriously slow down. I think we'll have, you know, catastrophic sort of earnings coming out on Sunday, and that will cause the central banks to do something. But they have to. They can't, even if inflation is higher than targets, they can't just keep choking the economy, because I think the effect of this is, you know, the full effect is yet to be felt. And so, yeah.
I think there's actually a political angle as well, because we've got two big elections next year.
Yeah.
We've got the US presidential in November, and we've also got a potentially very late sort of general election. I can't see Rishi Sunak going into that general election wanting, you know, sort of like a deep recession. So he's going to put pressure on Andrew Bailey. And I actually think the economy is weaker than the data suggests anyway. So I know it sounds bizarre, but I can actually see the Bank of England bringing down interest rates to a lower level than market currently expects, and therefore we see a UK rally. However, I can also equally see that, because there's so much sort of, like, you know, still money swooning around in the US, I can actually see the US economy remaining stronger, continuing to stay stronger, even though they've got the high interest rate, just because we've got that sort of cushioning effect of 30-year mortgages, which aren't being rolled off out in the States. So the effect of higher interest rates is taking longer to actually, that medicine's taking longer to be digested in the US economy, whereas in the UK, it's much shorter and more dynamic, well, in terms of interest rates with auto loans and mortgages and stuff like that. But anyway, let's see. But it's been an absolute sort of bear market. But yeah, coming back to,
Ben has commented, morning guys, this bear market is getting very long in the tooth for small caps. Reasons to be cheerful? ? And so I suppose you.
Well, I'll give you part one. I'll give you part one of that one, though, because that was the Ian Dury and the Blockhead song, wasn't it? Yeah. When it comes to sort of like Sondrel now, with regards to sort of like where the market was, you talked about it was 45% down from all-time peak. Well, I took a 64% hit on one day, so I've unfortunately helped contribute to that to the 41% or 44% decrease in AIM just last week. And they came out with a trading update, and I think the big picture here is such that they should have enough cash to, you know, to get them through this year, no doubt about it. What the market hasn't yet seen is that they've got some working capital unwind coming back into the balance sheet. They had 3 million of cash at the end of last year. They've got 4 million of cash coming in the first half from this working capital unwind from an OEM automotive customer. And they'll have cash burn of about 4. So that should leave them about 3 or 2 net cash at the end of the year. I think Cenkos, the broker, have got them around break even. And then it all really comes down to whether the US chip market is going to be able to, given that it's just been described as very, very buoyant, is going to get them out of jail. And there's not going to be any infection really from the slower European and the Israeli chip market. And that's a really sort of like an open question. And therefore it comes down to how do you actually see the business next year? And whether you're an investor, are you going to sort of like, you know, you're going to buy on the dip you're going to hold or you're going to sell. Now, I very rarely double down on shares, and I'm not going to in this respect because there's still a lot of uncertainty and more uncertainty than I actually thought. I knew there was all, when I went into it, what the biggest risk I always mentioned to you was lumpy contracts. I just didn't realize three lumpy things were going to all simultaneously hit on day one. I have actually spoken to Graham, the CEO, Graham Curran, who's the 45% shareholder. He's been through this many a time before, so knows which levers to pull. And really, when you strip down all the sort of the, you know, the estimates for next year, what you really need is a £15 million sales business on the engineering side, which will make them cash flow break even for 2024. And given they're doing about 13 now, that's not insurmountable if the US does come out with some sort of, like, you know, good contracts. And those delays ones haven't actually gone away. They're probably going to be in the difficult bucket because the OEM on the other side of it has now lost their sort of competitive advantage versus their rivals, and therefore may not actually ever launch those products. But let's wait and see on that. That's sort of like, you know, still work in progress. So I'm not going to double down because of the elevated risks. I'm not going to sell because one of the biggest mistakes you can make as an investor, in my view, is you go into actual stock knowing there's a solid investment case, and I still believe there is. The thesis is still, you know, still intact. And then, you know, you're sort of like semi-expecting there might be a profit warning, because there's always profit warnings around this. There's one heavy profit warning here, and then you sell on despair. And I think that's a really big mistake, given that the investment case is still not had a chance to run its full course. So I'm actually going to hold. I'm going to stay, you know, with my position. I haven't sold any at all. And I've always been a long-term investor in these ones. They're playing the sort of like the five nanometer and three nanometer sort of like, you know, space for chip design, for ASCII chip designs, for OEM. So they're really in a good position. But as I say, they got hit by three of them. And then you got to look at it and you say, well, you know, did they really, you know, sort of like, were they led up the garden path by these OEMs who just kept on, you know, sort of planning a product launch and then decided to pull it? And that could well have been the case. And then you've got to question how firm their actual order book is and their current pipeline is. And I think that's what's really triggered one of the institutional sellers just dumping about 6 or 7 million shares on the market in a fairly illiquid stock, which has just taken it down 60-65%. So, yeah. Hey, it wasn't an enormous position. It was a big smack in the face. I've been here before. I've, you know, you can't get everything right. And certainly, you know, when it comes to sort of me, I've always been very transparent. You know, 2/3 of my predictions are right and 1/3 of them are wrong. And, you know, this looks as though it could well be one third wrong. But it doesn't mean the game's over. If they can actually start pulling some contracts in maybe later this year, announcing those and then hit that sort of like, you know, cash flow break even or cash flow positive for next year, which is what the, you know, Graham is confident he's going to do, then hey, that'll be a totally different animal. The shares will actually do really, really well. But hey, that's a very, very, very big if. And would I recommend any shareholder to buy at the moment? No, because I'm certainly not buying. But equally, if you hold shares, then you've just got to make a decision whether you want to put a, you know, draw a line under the sand, sell off, dispose of your shares, get it out of your psyche, which is a fair play. You know, a lot of people just say, I just want this off my balance sheet and I don't want to worry about it anymore because it's just been so painful. And then if you have a clean start, which you do get a lot of, is that cathartic sort of like event that investors do need. But I'm not there. I'm happy to, not happy, I will hold because I don't think the investment thesis is still there. It's still, if you actually believe, and there's a big if, but if you believe the US and the overall chip market for small, very, very small chip design, and you listen to things like Broadcom, the industry leader, it's a buoyant market. And they've got a good reputation. They don't, you know, they work with the biggest people like Tesla and Apple and some of the other, you know, huge big OEMs. So it isn't as though they haven't got a good track record. They can do it. Hey, but was I disappointed and was I battered and bruised a bit like Smiley yesterday at Alton Towers? And the answer to that is, yeah, flipping. I didn't sleep well for about a week, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, you know, the markets and investing, it's largely about, you know, how you deal with it mentally. And like I said, I think the last time that happened to me, a big like 60% drop, was in Plarium. And I held a big chunk of that. And literally, it is like a gut punch. And I said, I did text you saying, you know, it's like that old Rocky saying, it isn't how hard you can hit, you know, it's how hard you can take a hit and keep coming forward. And, you know, with Plarium, I let it bounce. I didn't get out, so I let it bounce. And then I sort of got out a bit. So, but I should have sort of de-risked before that. So I was up quite nicely, but yeah, it is almost, it takes the wind out of you for, but then it, like I said, the pain goes away a little bit, and you
the way I take some of the pain away, and this is just me personally, is I write it off totally in my portfolio. So now I've taken it down to one pence. It's still there, so I can actually see it, but effectively it's worthless, it's immaterial. And I've done the same with Ascensus, which is another one I'll come on to. And and on that basis, going forward, it can't hurt you anymore because you can't go below zero. You've still got it in there, so you're interested to see how things are going to, you know, sort of develop. But you know, you're not going to die a death of a thousand cuts as the share price just keeps dropping down, which can easily happen, and it can change your psyche and undermine your confidence. So that's how I deal. That's how I've got my cathartic event. If I write it down in my portfolio to zero, yes, it's extremely painful, but it ain't going to hurt me anymore. And you know, you live to fight another day. But hey, you know, if you're the same, I'm the same, Paul Scott's the same. Every stock you pick has got the chance of actually getting absolutely, you know, hammered at some moment. And unfortunately, I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it doesn't mean it's game over. But I wasn't too happy, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Plarium chart. I was buying down here in 2019 about sort of around about 17, 18 pence, and I averaged up a little bit. And then it got all the way up to here, and I didn't take any off at all. And all of a sudden, I had that big, sort of that, 58% down. And it bounced nicely. And I took some off there. And then it literally has been a nightmare since. And it's just gone down to that. So in that range there, it broke down again. And that was at 10 pence.
Wow.
It's like, what is going on there? In fact, Ben predicting what I was going to say, I suppose. But that's been a nightmare. It's one of the stocks that I sort of really believed in. I think I still do believe in it, but I thought, what's gone wrong there? The contracts haven't come out. There's, you know, the commercial. It's game changing tech. But like I said, sometimes you can't fall in love with the story because you can lose a lot of money like that. If the share price isn't going the right direction, you know, it's there. You've got to be realistic about it. But I suppose writing it off like that is maybe a good practice, you know, to do that.
Yeah, I've written it off my portfolio, but I haven't written off the investment thesis yet. It's still it's revenue. It's been generating revenue for years. I mean, you know, it doubled revenue last year to 17 million quid, or about 60%, 70% revenue. So it grew hugely just this year. It's had those three contracts. But you know, I mean, it undermines my confidence in terms of the quality of the technology. I had a better view of the business, of its USPs and its IPR. Going into it, a much better position, but it isn't dead and buried yet. But once my thesis is broken, then regardless of where the shares, I'll sell. So, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, well, not last. In fact, you touched on. We touched on it a couple of weeks before when you talked about Paul Scott, and you said sometimes, you know, when things go wrong and you've had a run of bad luck, you do question. You know, I did sort of in the bull market did very, very well, and I'm really struggling then since the last 2 years. Have I completely changed what I'm doing? Do I know how to do this anymore? What's going on? You question your entire conference. Yeah. But you realize, and I mentioned, I can't remember that, Jeremy Strait is, I can't think of the fund manager, who went through an amazing period of being the best fund manager around. Yeah. I can't think of his name now. But then the dot-com bubble sort of happened, and he wasn't in tech stocks, and everyone else was making money, and his companies weren't. And he was he basically got dumped by this, you know, fund manager. And he literally, about 3 days after he's dumped, the dot-com bubble, you know, popped and his stock started rising. But he said, literally 3 years, he didn't make a return for his investors. And everyone was just starting to turn around and say he's lost it, you know. And even Warren Buffett's had that, he's lost it. And but you do sort of, and even those guys, they must question their confidence in their style for a while, but you've got to stick to your knitting a little bit. So, and also evolve. It's a very funny thing. It's very difficult. You can't just stick to one thing because things do change. And so you have to evolve a little bit. Like I said, in the bull market, I was happy to average down the stock if it dumped a little bit, because I know the general trend, you know, money was coming into the market. So the current was with you. In this market, the bear market, I don't feel I have the confidence to do that. And I'll wait till the trend is right, because, like I said, it's not a dip. It could be a downtrend, and that can last a lot longer, and it can be very painful. So you do have to tweak little bits of what I do, and I try and tweak little bits of what I do, because otherwise it costs me a lot more than it already has. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I find over sort of economic cycles, I mean, I've been sort of monitoring my portfolio for like 25 years and been investing professionally for sort of like, you know, 30 odd, et cetera. And through numerous different cycles overall, you know, I've made sort of 15% per annum return, and I'm absolutely delighted with that. And so I know my system works. And as I said many a time, I'm sort of out of sync with what usually happens on the stock markets. Yes, shares will go up in a bull market and go down with the bear market, no doubt about it. But equally, on a sort of flat market, I can go up the market, you know, and beat the market, or I can go down, or even if there could be a bear market, my portfolio goes up, which is what happened last year. And there are also instances where it's a bull market and my portfolio has gone down. So, you know, I operate at very much a sort of lots of idiosyncratic risk, fairly concentrated portfolios. And you've just got to accept that, you know, you live and die by your stock picking, and sometimes the stocks go against you. And that's just part and parcel. And I think the biggest real sort of, you know, thing that you need to sort of like digest as an investor is what your hit rate is and what you're trying to get to. And given I know my hit rate is, you know, I'm going to be wrong at least a third of the time, then this is just one of those things. You're not going to get to your 15% per annum over the over an economic cycle without taking a lot of hits. And that's where you need to have, you know, emotional stability. You need to have consistency and confidence in your understanding and your ability that, yes, you're going to make mistakes, and this is just part of the journey. And to get the good side, you've got to take the bad sides. And it's always difficult, because it's four times more painful when you get a punch in the face or it all goes down by 60% than it is if it goes up by 60%. So it's basically if you do what you and I do, losing money on shares sometime is what's going to happen. You've just got to accept it, and therefore it's that emotional stability. You're not as bad as your worst moment, and you're not as good as your best moment. And if you can keep some sort of level of sort of that consistency and logic and rationale, then you'll get through these tough times. But hey, I can say whatever I like, as much as, you know, this, but it's still painful for me personally, emotionally.
No, it is. That's why I sort of love and hate investing, because, you know, you go into it wanting to make money, you know, and if you get it wrong, it hits you in the very place you don't want it to hit you, and that's you lose the money. So it's in the opposite of what you want it to do. And so it's very bad. But the thing is, it's an old cliche, but, you know, the best lessons are learned in the hardest times. And when you take a hit like this, it is, you know, very humbling. It's been for me the last 2 years, very humbling to reassess everything, which is not a bad thing. You know, and a lot of stuff you've been doing, you realize is correct, but you may need to tweak a couple of things in future. And it helps you learn and get better. At the end of the day, you've got to get better. Because if everyone going to make money in the stock market, no one would go to work. That'd be it. It'd be easy to do. But you can't. It shouldn't be this hard. I know that. But it's never going to be easy. You still have to do research and understand the risks and all that stuff, you know. But
one thing I would just highlight, though, you've got to change, and you have got to change with the times about, you know, industries and learning and all this sort of stuff. But when it comes to sort of like your investment strategy, you just got to be careful here, because if you make a gut-wrenching punch, as I did, and you fundamentally then shift your investment strategy from what I do to something else, and what I'm not, you know, I'm less good at, then actually you're going to go to more higher risk, and your overall returns are going to decrease. So you've got to be careful that you've got to stick with your knitting, but also, you know, sort of like learn more. But I don't think you've just got to accept that this is one of those 30 odd or 40% of losers that you incur that it's always going to happen, and you can't avoid it. That's fact of life. And that's why it's so difficult, is that most people don't like investing. because they just can't take the punches. And they get to a stage in their life when they've got, frankly, for them, better things to do than worry about some of their stocks going blow up. Whereas you and I accept the worry, we accept the hits, because if we don't accept them, we're not going to play in the game. As in, like, you know, it's gonna kill you. So you just have to, if you're in it, you're going to get hit, and hopefully overall you'll do well. But don't fundamentally question if you've got a successful strategy, don't fundamentally throw that out the window just because something goes down or one or two things go down. And you view it as your strategy is wrong, where actually it's just odds. It's just basically that they're in that 30 to 40%. So that's where you've got to be careful. If you are genuinely making a mistake, then change it. But if you're not, you know, it's just part of that game.
Well, I've sort of gone back to where I was, you know, bull market. I went through a period of even looking at bigger stocks and all that. I started investing, I was in bigger stocks, I mean, a smaller cap. And I really like this, small micro nano caps even, you know, and I categorize those as a sub 20 million. Mm. And I really like that space. And I love sort of micro caps as well, sub 100 million or whatever. But, and I've gone back to that. But the change I've made is in a bear market, there was, lack of liquidity. Like I said, redemptions happen, people sell, gets worse and worse, and you get stuck into a stock you can't get out of, you take a massive hit. So how I changed that is I've now just taken on a fund, and I will put 1% of my total portfolio value into a fund. It's the IUKD fund, and that pays about 6% at the moment a year. And eventually, you know, if I don't make money at the other stocks, and I don't feed into that, that'll be the majority of my portfolio pay me. So, I get the stage where even if my microcaps all go sort of wrong, then I've still got this dividend paying fund, but I want to make a lot more money from my micro caps to feed into that fund. So that's the way I've changed at the moment. So I've got a bit, I will always have some liquidity in that fund, and I've also got still a bit of cash, but my aim is to get back what I lost over the last 2 years. It's like, it's hard work.
You'll take you a long time to do that.
Yeah. This market will. I mean, I don't think it's really, like I said, a breakneck rally. I think we'll have some rallies and coming back down because inflation is going to hang around. And there'll be some blips along the way and data and all that stuff. But anyway, any stocks you want to chat about quickly?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think the one with the biggest news, positive, was Bellascura, which was 2 weeks ago, that came out with that really flagship contract with its US manufacturing partner in OMAX. And they struck a sort of 10-year licensing deal, $55 million. And that's really just the tip of the iceberg. It's on sort of minimum volumes. It could be a lot higher given the size of the market, 100 million, sort of like, you know, COPD patients out there. Bellascura, just as a recap, do these oxygen, the portable oxygen concentrator, state of the art, FDA approved. They're launching in the States. They're hopefully going to get approval in the next 12 months in Europe and also in other places in Asia. It's a massive deal. It's another huge sort of endorsement of the quality of the technology into a real big market. They'll have their interim results fairly soon for the period, 6 months ending June, which should come out later in September. I'm looking forward to touching base with the guys. But yeah, I mean, they're getting more and more sort of like real stamps of approval of how good this technology is. If they can cover off the two biggest markets, the US, which is that they're doing direct and through distributors, they're holding that themselves, and China, which is absolutely enormous, then hey, that's pretty good. And there's obviously there's plenty of smokers in Europe as well who need this this device. And so what it's going to come down to is execution. Can they manufacture sufficient quantities of these to be able to actually deliver? And they're going to go through a relatively soft launch in the States, make sure that the quality of the production of the units coming in for them from their own in-house manufacturing of the team out in the US brings the devices to market, and then ramp up with more volume coming in the US and also from their partner out in China as well for this new Discover device, which they got 15 million of pre-orders, and they could have taken a lot more. So I think the big picture for Bellascura is the demand is off the charts. Their technology is leading edge. Now it comes down to execution. And I'm pretty damn sure the board know that. And that's really what they're going to be doing for the next 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at that. A nice chart. Look, I mean, if you look at, even if you just put the 200-day moving average, I mean, it IPO'd what, back here, 2021, to 50 pence, something, went up to, 150. And then we had this sort of the bear market kicking in the end of 2021. It came down. That's the 200-day moving average, the red, broke down. And now you can see a nice little, it came down to this range, broke down, broke back up. And now it's above that 200-day moving average. And that's the first time it's done that since, back in May 22, so it's over a year, and you can see the bottom's in. It's seeming now it's starting to go in a nice uptrend there. So that's good. Yeah, looking.
Yeah,
good.
I mean, when I look back at it, I wish I'd bought obviously Berlusconi instead of Sondrel about the same time, because it was my last purchase. I mean, I've only owned Sondrel for about 4 or 5 months. So if I'd instead sort of like stuck to Berlusconi, then I'd have had a laugh. But hey, such is life. I bought it about, I can't remember, it was about 45p or 50p or something. But anyway, such is life. It'll stay in my mind.
Yeah, I've got to say that I'm now looking at, I'm going to say this, but at the current market cap, I'm thinking, well, listen, if they get away those forecasts, there's some decent upside here.
It's elevated risk, though. I mean, I would say it's going to come down to whether they can get those contracts in place for their engineering team for next year. I've spoken to Graham Curran, the CEO and the founder. He's pretty confident that they are. He's an unassuming guy. He knows the levers to pull. So if anybody can do it, he can do it. But it isn't all in his control, because it comes down to how much demand is there in OEM electronics. And although he's operating at the sharp end of ASCII chip design, hey, if you go into it, you just got to expect you're either going to make an absolute killing and do really, really well, or frankly, it could come down big time if they have to go for a placing. I mean, you look at Syntoma this morning, who came out with an emergency rights issue of about their chemicals business owner.
Yeah.
280 million market cap, and they came out with a 260 or 70 million rights issue. And I mean, it was a 40% discount to their X rights. And I just, if a big cap or mid cap stock can do that, then if Sondrel has to do it, it's going to be extremely painful.
Well, they are. I mean,
That's better than I thought it would be, actually. Because normally,
look at the chart, though. Look at the chart. Even if you leave the 200-day moving average, it's come from like £5 down to 43 pence.
Yeah,
that's and that's unfortunately, it's not an unusual story. I mean, there's a lot of companies that lost 90%.
That's on the LSE as well. That's the main market.
Oh yeah. So
when you talk about Sondrel being at 60% down in a day, well, that's been about 80% down in over a couple of years, isn't it? So
I mean, in this market, I say it is. If you're picking winners, it's completely different.
Yes.
You are contrarian completely, because do you know what I'm going to say? I'm a bit more buoyant. I've been sort of depressed quite a lot for a long time, but I mean, I've had a few winners in the last few weeks, which is nice, quite nice, and it almost like reaffirms your confidence and thinking, okay, I can still do this. I do still know what I'm doing. I've tweaked it a little bit, and in fact, one of those has been I mentioned last week was a Lung Life, another one, Destiny Pharma. I've had a couple of other big winners, and that's good.
Winners then? So you've had Destiny Pharma and Lung Life.
Well, I mean, going back, when I went to the bigger caps, I did, what's the company that got taken over? That one, Argentex, all that stuff. I went back that way and but the thing is, I sort of had a bit of conviction with Destiny Pharma. I just thought, that's a silly market price. So I did put a bit more in than I would have normally. And it's almost like now I'm stopping losing money that I have been the last 2 years. It's starting to, and I think it's largely, due to the market maybe, hitting the bottom sort of close to, and so it's less of a fall off in general stocks. But also, see, rechecking, I've got it right, because, it's been a difficult market. You tend to learn more, you tend to be more cautious, and you don't just jump in. You can do that in a bull market. You can jump in, just chase things, and it'll go up. You can't do that in a bear market. You just have to be better, get better at it. And
you highlight a really important point here, extremely wise words. If you go through a bad patch, and I've been through many a bad patch in the over 30 years, 25 years, you went through a bad patch for 2 years. And you get to a stage of almost despondency. You're sort of battered, and you know, but it will turn. Just expect, you know, the darkest is before the dawn, isn't it? We always say, and you don't know when it's going to turn. And the same has been said, you know. And I sort of say, I strongly recommend people watch the Paul Scott video, because a year ago, I mean, I've been interviewing him every 3 months. Okay, a year ago, he said to me, "Oh, do I want to do a, you know, sort of like another video, because I've just been battered so much in my market. I had a really bad 2022. And I said to him, "Look, you've got a lot of investors who follow what you want, and they're really benefiting." He said, "Yeah, absolutely. I've got to do it for other people, but mentally and wise, I'm pretty much destroyed."
Yeah.
And now he's had a really good 2023. His home portfolio is up into mid 30s, 30, you know, you know, percent, which is in an AIM market down 10% plus. So he's had a really good 2023, and he's buoyant. He's, you know, I mean, he's had a fantastic year to date performance. And the thing is, for investors, if you're going through a really difficult period, it will get better. And Paul was also saying on his, you know, Stockopedia channel, he can't believe how many investors are really, really depressed. I mean, you know, having real problems in terms of, you know, their portfolio, and it's mentally destroying them. And I think that's when we come back to the original point, you know, don't give up, you know, and if you can get through the mental stress of what you're just going through, you'll become thicker skinned. Your risk tolerance will get better, and you'll learn more, and you'll sort of, like, you know, you'll prepare better for the going forward, and you will see the good times ahead. So don't throw in the towel.
There's nothing I'm more passionate about than investing. I've always loved it. Since my A-level economics teacher, Barry Williams, decided at end of term once.
Barry Williams.
He said, "Today we're going to do a fantasy stocks and shares competition." I thought, "What?" And I've heard of stocks and shares. My grandfather used to look them on teletext. But I thought, "Well, let's do that." Yeah. That really got me into it. I mean, so passionate. But then when you have a hard 2 years like this, literally, almost you lose. I mean, I've been, you know, I've had to do this every day, talk on video, but I'm almost like saying, I don't want to do it. I've just lost my passion. If you lose your passion for that, which is your biggest passion in life, it gets really hard, but then it can turn around very quickly. Like I said, in the last couple of months, I've had, you know, a decent few winners. Mm. And so it does turn around. And all you need is one or two, and it can really change your point of view. And I feel like I'm back with it a little bit. You know, it's still not shaking off that the bear market. It is dark and horrible. It's not shaking it off, but you're right. It does get better. But I've been sort of points where, same as Paul, I don't want to do commentary or
and I can understand it. Yeah, you know, absolutely. You're just battered, aren't you?
It's like a boxer who's you know favored to win something. Getting battered in the ring and say, "Right, let's watch it back in front of everyone." Then, no, let's not watch it back. Yeah. Why should I watch myself being beaten up? Yeah. It's like, no, it's not. It's not good. Mm. Any other stocks I bought?
Yeah.
I was going to talk about a stock.
You go next, because I've had a few.
Intelligent Ultrasound. I've bought a few of those.
Oh, right, yes. Congratulations.
Yeah. I quite like them. I mean, it's quite volatile. I've been looking for a long time. I've interviewed Stuart Gall, and they do sort of classroom to clinic ultrasound. So they teach people how to use ultrasound with their simulation machines, and then they also, in the clinic, professionals actually use them. And what I like about this company, it's sort of the classroom side is a nice, steady grower of revenue. What was the half-year results to June was like up to 6.1 million, only up 3%, but they did say that was compared to a 1.4 million order last year, which made it bigger. But what I quite like about this, the AI side. Now, GE are using their AI, and that's, you know, to identify certain markers and obstetricians in all different parts of the equipment. But GE is obviously one of the biggest in the world. Mm. And I was looking at the AI side, I thought, yeah, but it doesn't account for anything, does it, right at the moment? And for the half year, the AI side is doing... It's done 700 million of revenue. I thought, okay, it's okay.
700 million revenue?
Sorry, 700,000. Sorry.
I was going to say, I was thinking, wow, it's the biggest IA company outside of NVIDIA.
I know. And they did 700,000. That's okay. It's not significant. They look back at last year, it did 300,000. Right. And then by the end of this year, it's going to double again. It's going to double again. Okay. And that they are forecasting that by 2025, this company will be doing 25 million in revenue. Half of that will come from AI. Mm. So we're going from like 300,000 a couple of years ago to around about 12, 13 million in revenue this year. They will be profitable. They've got cash to get to profitability. And I thought, this is a market cap, 35 million. And they are making money off their AI products with one of the biggest manufacturers in the world. And I thought, this is, and I was so impressed with it. And The brokers got a valuation of about 100 million two parts of the business. But it's just the growth in the AI side is phenomenal.
What percentage have you taken in your portfolio now?
It's not a huge amount. I mean, I'm literally still, I'm still bruised from the pay market a bit. So I'm edging. And so I'm at only about 5%.
That's a fair paint. That'll move the dial. There's no doubt about it. If it doubles, it'll move the dial. But the share charter.
The reason why I haven't sort of talked about this. It's really hard to get any stock. It's like that worries me a little bit, going up and down, because this rise here, for example, this is what happened when
this is the Paul Scott effect. He had the same thing with Plexus, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, this is what they were mentioned in the Midas column, on the Mail on Sunday.
Yeah, okay.
And literally shot up by 51% the next day because there's no stock available. And so it's like, I don't want to get too deep into that because in fact, they are very confident they'll be profitable on the current cash and the growth is quite good. Like, so the AI side is very impressive. And I just thought, how many companies, I mean, everyone's talking about the AI side, and we've got an AI strategy, AIs. How many companies out there, let alone a 55 million market cap company based in Cardiff, and Atlanta, but how many actually making money on the AI side? They are, and it's going to be growing very quickly. And you think, well, if GE using it, and GE hasn't got an AI strategy, that says a lot for IUG, for intelligent ultrasound. So I do quite like them. It's a bit.
I think the broader point is that you can guarantee, being a big healthcare company, GE have got an AI strategy. But if their AI strategy isn't as good as intelligent ultrasounds, which they wouldn't license it, implies, then frankly, it says that intelligent ultrasound is probably one of the top AI, ultrasound providers in the world. Because if GE, they'll have a tech team working on this, and if theirs isn't as good as these guys because they're having to license it in, it says everything about the quality of this technology.
Yeah, but this kind of volatility here, like I said, it'll go up from 8 pence to 12 pence, you get a couple of cents, it'll just drop back down because it's like it needs more liquidity. I think it's quite well held by institutions as well, so there's not a lot of stock about. Like I said, that's a reason why I can move quickly up and down. But I do like the fact that now they've said, we will be profitable on current cash, the growth is going quite nicely. But the AI side is just very impressive, and I think the broker said something like, they say they're going to be one of the major players in the world in this area.
Sense. Yeah, I mean, I like medical devices. I think it's a great play, and ultrasound is good because what's actually happened. I mean, I remember as a kid, I used to have ultrasound sort of like stuff done on my heart because I got a bit of a dodgy sort of like a cardioelectrogram. So I've had that done myself many a time, and the technology now, the image quality is terrific in ultrasound. It really is high def. And they're using it for more and more in indications. So not only is the AI improving the sort of the diagnosis side and helping people perform better ultrasound scans, but also the actual market for ultrasounds is increasing because it's becoming a much more relevant technology and addressing a lot more sort of therapeutic areas. So you can use it for sort of like other types of imaging. I think it sounds like it's got leading technology in a niche area that many of the big OEMs, the four big OEMs in the world who do scanners haven't got that sort of like level of expertise. And it all comes down to execution now. They're a small company. They're great technology, a bit like Bellascura Medical Devices. Can they really scale this business quickly to maximize their competitive advantage?
Yeah. I mean, look at that there. That's gutting. Someone, obviously, there was a volume here, a bit of red there, selling, a few days before the Midas Touch column mentioned it. It must be gutting to actually down, because it's 7 pence. Look at that. It was 7 pence. Yeah. And it's been going down. But you've seen there, it broke up. And it's almost an artificial trend break upwards there, because that Midas Touch has come back a little bit. Someone's obviously taken some profit down here. Then it's got sort of back. And I kind of like it's in this sort of area, which is quite nice. Of anything around this area.
You've got good expertise. he's having owned the Polarian, you know a lot about all these scanning business. Yeah. So
That's it. And it is have none of that risk. They are generating revenue. They are FDA approved. Mm. They got all that risk behind them. There's nothing to worry about in that side of it, you know. And all they have to do is keep selling, you know. And like I said, and they got more products going into the AI area. It's been marketed, so it's literally just rolling it out now. The commercial strategy. So it's no sort of development risk or anything like that.
Another company that I own, it's I've just put an announcement that morning on AI, is Alico. It was only a reach, but they basically are inputting incorporating AI technology into their build tech project management platform. I mean, I think they've got their interims coming out next week. They've just bought a business, I think it was a Best Outcome a few months back for about £5 million. That expands their addressable market into project management, not only in build tech, but in other sort of forces. And they hopefully can put this AI technology overlay into their software. And you can see how much benefit that's going to be to their end users, because, you know, if you've got all the data, which they have there, you're effectively mining it and bringing insight into that sort of, the build tech project management data to have better outcomes for the people who are scheduling and with time and budgeting, et cetera. So you have better accuracy at the coal face for each particular product using AI. Plus, they can put in a lot of benchmarking, information overlay over on top, which again should improve the performance, not only improve the individual, but improve the company's performance overall as well. So, I think you'll see this a lot in the comes to the software space. Quite a few partnerships between companies with AI expertise, and then you've got your enterprise software SaaS businesses like Alico, who then overlay AI on top to improve the quality of the overall product and add value to their clients, because they're maximizing their data, the benefit of the data they've got from years and years and years in project management and time to improve the actual product. So I'm hoping to hear more about that next week. I mean, they're cashed up. They've got good customers. I mean,
you've had those for years, haven't you?
Yeah, I've had them for years. Yeah, 2015 was the first time I bought them.
Oh wow! So I said to you recently, you've held on to those even though they've come off with the
white. Yeah. No, I mean, the investment thesis has always been there, thick and thin. You know, I mean, it pays dividends, and it's been doing well.
Well, that's the thing, you see. I mean, even if you take a big hit, like I said, you were investing around this 19-20 pence level in 2015.
Yeah.
And it's went up to 140 and it's come back to 77 pence, which is still massively up from 20 pence, you know? And even now it's looking good. I mean, the chart, like I said, this 200-day moving average broken down. It's now just broken up above it. It's above it. And I think break above this almost 82 pence level, and that's above a new range there. So I think it's seen the low here. The good buy there at 60 odd pence, I think, if you could get in that level.
Yeah, but I think it's a good quality. It's cheap now. It's cheap at the moment. So it's a good quality company. Another one which is overlaying technology, which came out with an announcement just recently, I think it was last week, was Saieta. And they're basically putting a software package into their e-drives for 2 and 3 wheel electric meter vehicles out in India. And this is a vehicle control unit. And the idea there is you've got motors, you've got the actual transmission network, you've got the control electronics, which operate in between all those. And then they've added on this new vehicle control unit, which will take on all the data from the car to be able to then maximize that through your traction and your slippage and your wheels and your vehicle consumption, your fuel consumption and all this sort of stuff. Another good, really good add-on for Saieta. And again, I think they should be coming out with their results fairly soon. And we keep saying it's coming down to execution, and they've been talking about it for many a time. They've got the demand, and they just need to basically be able to deliver these e-drives out into India, get them out on time onto the road, and they'll start, hopefully then use that as a launch pad to sign more contracts as well. And the vehicles, the volumes we're talking about are hundreds of thousands and millions in ultimately just in India. So again, it comes down like intelligent ultrasound, like Bellascura and the similar with Saieta, execution. They've got the technology, they've got a really good product, and it's going to come down to scaling the business. Can you get that particular device or whatever it is out into the hands of customers quickly in the right level of quality and consistency?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was massively oversold. I bought when it started to rally above that previous low here, and it broke up, and then I had a stop loss in here. But I don't know what's going, why it's not rallying here. Is it concerns of a cash or what? Because it seems to be doing all the right things. But it maybe needs to go sideways a while. But you can probably see, unless, you know, something, they release something disastrous. I think the bottom's here. And like I said, it bounced a higher low here at 31 pence. So hopefully it's going to break above that 200 day. But I thought it rallied more strongly than this.
Don't be surprised if sometime, you know, you've got a big traditional combustion engine drive manufacturer who, like a GKN, who decides to take a strategic stake of 20, 25% in this business.
Yeah.
And it would not surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that's total sort of guesswork. I've got no insight into anything like that would ever happen. But all I would say is it would just be a perfect fit to anybody who does the traditional sort of traditional drive, motors in combustion engines. If they haven't got a proper developed, you know, e-drive strategy, then hey, so it's just perfect.
Yeah. I tell you what's frustrating me. The results came out on the 19th, actually, is Good Energy, which I quite like. And this is
2 weeks' time. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And do you know what? It's going back to when you talked about, risk and reward back there. You talked about this with Paul. And a lot of the time now in bear markets, I do look at risk first. You know, in bull markets, you look at, okay, how much can I make on this? But first of all, if you look at how much you're likely to lose, you know, first of all, your exposure, but then where's the downside in the stock? And it's almost sometimes, you know, I had it with Destiny Farm and plenty of other companies. When you sort of investing, you sort of know it's right, it's going right. But the share price isn't reacting. You think, what's going on? It's a matter of time. And this is very low liquidity stock. Any sells, tiny little bit of sell, will take it down a little notch. You think, that's so annoying. But if you look at the forecast, they're expected to do about 320. This is a 28 million market cap, by the way. They've got a 19 million of cash. The net asset value is 38 million. They're going to do about 326 million of top line revenue, EBITDA of 5 million. That'll be doubling next year because of their new businesses, heat pumps, solar, and being an energy supplier rather than owning assets, and they reduced debt and all that stuff. So the EBITDA is doubling to 10 million for 2024 estimated, and then up another 50% again to 15 million. And I'm thinking, they're valued at like literally way below net asset value, and they are in a very hot space. And I think it's just a matter of time before it starts to take off. So I've got about 9% of these in my portfolio.
Oh, wow, okay.
I'm not going to go until the trend changes and starts going up. I'm not going to put more in. But I do believe like the brokers, they are let me split the chart, I'm saying. The brokers have a target of 475. They're at 176. And I'm thinking it will get, they said that their offer from their largest shareholder still, they had an offer back here for £4 a share. And yet they're 176. It's just lack of liquidity. And I think it's a very hot space they're in, you know, it's really 100% renewables. And I don't understand. It's just, at the moment, it's just market doldrums. It will change. Sentiment will change. It's one of those ones where, you know, you think when you actually think of a company as a share price or a business, and you probably should think of them as a business all the time. Sometimes I think a company is a share price, which is wrong. But this is a business. I think I'd want to own more of this business. If I wanted to be a business owner, I would like more of this business because there's going to be more money flowing into this area of the market, and this is undervalued. And they've got cash, and they're profitable, and they pay a dividend. So, you know, they're not even using it. That cash is going to go up, by the way, to 19 million next year and 25 million the year after. So it's like, what's not to like there? But the share price is reacting. So sometimes ignore the share price sometimes and just focus on the business, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, hey, I mean, I don't always, you know, I mean, the share price is what it does. The markets do what they do. But, focusing on the fundamentals of the business is important. I mean, I had another one this week, Michelmers, the UK premium brick manufacturer, which came out with interims. And, I mean, I held this, I bought it back in, I think it was 2012. So, you know, 10 years ago, et cetera. And then I held it for about 7 years and sold, I think it was the back end of 2019 before the sort of pandemic, because the housing market had done well. And I wanted to redeploy funds into another area, into other stocks, which unfortunately got pummeled by the by the pandemic. So that wasn't a good decision. But anyway, I just mentioned, I've bought back in, and they came out with some good interims, all in line, good cash generation, and solid outlook, etc. And they've actually been taking market share in the brick market, so they've been doing everything correctly, etc. And the shares are just hoed hum. Yes, they're up a bit over the last couple of days, but they're dead cheap. I mean, they're cheaper than the rest of the sector. They've got a really rock solid balance sheet. They're run very well, fundamentally, you've got a premiumization of houses. Houses one, house builders and repair and maintenance on houses, which is over 50% of the actual business. They want to look better because it makes the value of your house go up, and just people are, a bit more house proud. And putting a new set of bricks, as in like, aesthetically pleasing bricks, is a very cheap way of doing that, to make the property look that much more appealing and presentable. It's a bit like putting paint on, a bit more expensive, but not much, etc. They're doing very well. So
I was surprised how bullish the results were when they updated there, because, and let's be honest, the fact in this market that's in this sector and they released anything and didn't go down, I think that's a positive. Because if you look at what the house builders are saying and what these are saying, it's two different stories, really, isn't it?
Yeah, so, well, I mean, just give you an indication, the brick making market in delivery terms in the first half, so exactly the same period as they were reporting for, went down by 25% like for like, year on year, 25%. Yeah. The overall brick market, their organic growth in the first half was 10% up. So it just shows you that, actually they're beating the market, and there is a premiumization. The people who are doing the work on their houses and repair and maintenance are the ones who can afford it, okay? Yeah. They're not the people who are discretionary or whatever. And they can see the benefits of having a much better looking sort of property and house. And therefore, they're serving the demographic that is willing to actually, make their house look a bit more, presentable, etc. Whether that will roll over next year, I really don't know. But all I would say is that they're operating the right sector. They've got a very good product. It's niche. They know how to do it, and it's turning the wheel. And they're rock solid balance sheet. And even if it's a dark, really dark recession, they're still going to play, because they mainly compete against imports. And the imports with fuel prices are pretty damn expensive. So it isn't as though it's a price competition there.
But also what I'm seeing there, I'm thinking, and I've said this to John, he's not quite convinced. He's not a fan of the house builders. I don't hold any house builders, but I'm saying we've had lots of bad news. Even today, news has come out, prices down, 14-year low, biggest drop in 14 years. But the house builders haven't hit new lows. That was the low back here in October, and yet they are bumping along here. So the fact they're not tanking again, to me, says, we're near that bottom somewhere.
I think you raise that's a very good point, because the stock market isn't the economy, and sometimes John can get sort of like maybe a bit fixated on the economics and the fundamentals, the macro backdrop, but the stock market works earlier than that, and it starts thinking about what's going to happen. And, it looks forward. So I'm with you. I'm actually going to be, I'm interviewing another a fund manager on Monday, Kartik Kumar from Artemis, who has about four or five, I think, house builders in his portfolio. So he's going to be pretty positive. It'll be fascinating to see what he says. But I'm with you. These things have been battered. They're trading at less than net tangible book. And even if you do get a continued decrease in house prices, they've got the cash to be able to get them through it for the next 2 years to do all the building that they actually need. Plus, you're actually getting institutional money flying into the sector because they want to do effectively build to rent on properties. So I'm with you. I think at these levels, I don't own a house builder because I own Alico and I own Michelmers. But I think there's good value in this area, even though fundamentally wise, you'd say the economics aren't perfect. But that doesn't mean the stock doesn't work. Another, and then finally, on my other one which reported, which I own, is Inspiration Healthcare, which does sort of like neonatal sort of baby incubators, premature babies who have been born early. They need help with ventilation, warming, etc. in hospitals, and they do these type of units. And they came out with but it was a profit warning. They've had their main neonatal, their own proprietary technology, has shown good growth in the first half. They've been hit though with some consumable products that come from a US distributor that hasn't got EU approval, unfortunately, in time, and is hoping to get it by the end of the year or early next year. And that means there's some volume of that going out, which is high value. And then likewise, we've had some destocking in their infusion, like pumps business, that's caused some self. Anyway, you put all that together, you then got a flat top line, first half, second half. But because they've got a better mix in terms of their own products, the gross margins have gone up. They generate a lot of cash from working capital unwind, which they'll do again in the second half. So this is a very, very, in my view, this is a very solid business. The share price has gone down. And I think this is, again, just a classic sort of hold. Just wait until, you know, the share price and the company starts living. And I think we're just going to push it for the next 6 months. But again, if you put a profit warning out in anything, you know, in this time of year, this moment, it's going to go down, which is what it is. But there's lots of positive catalysts. They've got a potential, you know, approval of FDA, submission of one of their incubators out into the States, which could open up markets. You know, they've got some other new products potentially coming as well, and the balance sheet is cash generative, is doing well. So there's plenty of value catalysts going forward for the actual business, and at these levels are very, very, very cheap for a medical devices company that has got good technology and is generating cash. Has got a good reputation throughout the world, basically through distributors and through, you know, direct channels. The products work; they work well. It's just going through a bad patch.
Yeah. Well, the entire stock market, in all shares, going through a bad patch, but it'll get better though. Always looking the bright side of life, I suppose.
Good job the shares didn't go down by 80% like Sondrel, anyway.
No, exactly. I mean, yeah. You've done a couple of rounds this last week with some...
Yeah, well, we all have, haven't we?
I know, right, yeah.
Okay, so any questions? Any more questions coming through at all? None at all?
Well, we got a couple of people saying that they've been bruised, they're in despondency level, I think, but no. Tech Capital own 11%. I've also a lot of other assets. It took my Bellascura there. I've had a terrible 2 years in the market, but now is the best time to be putting money into the market. I've been buying good quality investment trusts to avoid the profit warning risks. Okay, that's a good point. Yeah. And somebody just says, Daddy. I don't know why they say that. I think it's like, I want my daddy in this market. There we are. Marvellous stuff. Thanks for that, Paul.
Yeah, and, cheers, Justin.
We'll catch up in a couple of weeks' time if the stock market's still here.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.